Government officials meet today to put housing in its place.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner says Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac can never be the same again. Geithner's office released that statement this morning ahead of today's meeting in Washington with the housing secretary. Bankers will be there, too, along with economists and investors. Marketplace's John Dimsdale reports the financial crisis shook the system of government-backed mortgages, and what takes its place is up for debate.
Much of the American dream of homeownership is made possible by taxpayer-backed mortgage financing. But the credit squeeze and falling home values have left taxpayers propping up Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. A group of Republicans says it's time to turn housing finance over to the private sector. John Hyler advises House Republicans. He thinks private investors are ready to profit from record low mortgage costs.
With interest rates where they are broadly in the marketplace right now, I think there would be significant private capital to come in and take over the activity that Fannie and Freddie have been involved with.
But advocates for expanding middle-class homeownership say government incentives can work. John Taylor with the National Community Reinvestment Coalition says Fannie and Freddie safely helped homebuyers for many decades.
Let's instead make sure there's adequate oversight, adequate capitalization. Don't allow them to take the kind of risk that the free market took, and I think we'll be fine.
The White House is said to be considering scaling back government support. The administration will send Congress a reform package in January. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
That is the housing market. What about stock markets? Shares in Europe are up about 1%. Asian markets were mostly higher as well. Home Depot said this morning profits rose nicely in the last 3 months, but that was a result of cost cutting. Actual sales were disappointing. It was a lazy summer day on Wall Street yesterday. The Dow floated like a lily pad on a pond, drifting down 1 point to 10,302. Okay, now to a less idyllic picture of Manhattan. When you think New York taxicab, you might picture a white-knuckle ride in a death machine. But a new analysis of car crashes there shows a different picture. From the Marketplace Transportation Desk at WNYC, Colin Campbell tells us who New Yorkers should really be afraid of.
Khalid Mahmoud's yellow cab has paid his bills for the last 6 years, so he's not surprised that new data shows New York cabbies are rarely responsible for hitting people.
We don't want to lose our license, so we are very responsible driver, you know.
City transportation officials reported this week that cab drivers caused just 13% of crashes in which pedestrians are seriously hurt or killed. The data, 7,000 recent crashes, points to a new source, men. Male drivers are behind the wheel in 4 out of 5 of these kind of collisions, and they're most likely to be driving their own car, not a taxi, truck, or bus. Men are also most likely to be the ones hit. These injuries and deaths cost the New York economy about $1.4 billion a year in lost income. In New York, I'm Colin Campbell for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Ally Bank, committed to customer service with the option to reach a human being at any time at 877-247-ALLY by pressing 0. By Gather.com, the social network where people can make new friends who share their interests. People talking about today's news at news.gather.com. And by LendingTree, offering the ability to manage money, credit, and loans all in one place. LendingTree.com.
Today, the Federal Reserve reports on industrial production for July. Output was probably higher. The East Coast heat wave had utilities pumping out a lot of power for air conditioners. Heat waves are in part a financial story because the people they hurt the most are generally the ones who can't afford to escape the weather. Author Edward P. Cohn has written about the economics and politics of heat waves in a new book called Hot Time in the Old Town. Edward, welcome to Marketplace.
Thank you very much.
You chronicle the heat wave of 1896, which killed more than 1,000 people. It also helped a young Teddy Roosevelt become president because he stood up and said being poor in New York City shouldn't be a death sentence.
That's right. There was actually an ICE trust established in the city, and Roosevelt set about trying to bust the trust by giving away free ice to the poor of the Lower East Side.
And it was the poor that really got hit by these temperatures, right?
Absolutely. The average victim was a working age male, manual laborer, an immigrant probably living in the tenement. And the tenement itself was the last nail in the coffin for hundreds of New Yorkers.
Paint a picture for us of how the poor were living, especially living through those temperatures and humidity.
Yeah, that's right. It's not just that there wasn't, of course, air conditioning or electric refrigeration. The living and working conditions were so different 100 years ago. Most New Yorkers, of course, weren't stockbrokers and lawyers. They were manual laborers working 10 hours a day, 6 days a week, and going home to their stifling, suffocating, squalid tenements where during the heat wave, the temperature could easily reach 120 degrees, like living inside a pizza oven.
Let's forward to today, Edward. We still have heat waves, obviously. How far have we come in protecting the poorest people?
I don't think we've come very far. Look at the 1995 Chicago heat wave, killed 700 people. Look what's happening in Russia and Moscow now. We hear a lot from Russia about the fires, and we see the dramatic images of the smoke. We tend to forget that heat still remains today the number one natural disaster killer in the United States.
The book is Hot Time in the Old Town, The Great Heat Wave of 1896 and the Making of Theodore Roosevelt. Edward P. Cohn, thank you.
Thank you.
And finally, Lynn Rosenthal walked into a Manhattan Starbucks on Sunday and ordered a plain bagel. The barista's response was, "Would you like butter or cheese on that?" Rosenthal, who is an English professor, was not interested in a list of things she didn't want, so she simply repeated, "Plain bagel." The barista refused to serve her, and according to the New York Post, police were called. Rosenthal says Starbucks terminology is stupid, and she blames the barista for turning the dispute into a big deal. Not a grande deal, not a venti deal, just a plain big deal. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. Stay current on the business world by downloading a midday update podcast at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles and on Twitter at Bill Radke Radio, I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.